I have two daughters. Eden is 4 and a little bit of change, and Audrey's 18 months and some change. So having a 4-year-old means that I have one who has now started school. She is in preschool. She's learning to read and write, and she loves music class, art class. It's really been fun to talk to Eden about school on the way to school and talk to her about school on the way home. There's only been one trying element, and that's that of friendship. Even at 4 years old, the girls in her class have become catty and territorial. The news of the day is often who is whose best friend and who's not friends with who. And one particular morning, she was very disturbed on the way to school, and she said no one wanted to be her friend. My immediate reaction was, let me talk to those kids' parents, and I'll give them 10 reasons why Eden should be their kid's friend. Then I realized I was merely witnessing what would become one of many dramatic events in raising a daughter. So I calmed down a touch. Eden gathered herself. And I asked Eden a question. I said, Eden, did you know that there is someone who will always be your friend, no matter how funny, how cute, and how good you are? And with really big eyes, she said, really? And I said, yes, Eden. His name is Jesus. Well, she sunk back in her seat. And she said, Daddy, I don't want boyfriends. I want girlfriends. Well, I couldn't have been more happy. But what Eden is dealing with in preschool is what we all deal with our whole lives. And it's the need for friends. We need friends because we are like God and we need God. Think about it this way. Friendship has always existed because of the Trinity. Friendship preceded creation. In fact, the joy experienced in the friendships of the Trinity, Father, Son, Holy Spirit, spilled over into creation. Friendship is more basic and fundamental to life than anything else. So on the flip side of that, loneliness is cosmic dissonance. It's cosmic disharmony. Think about Adam. Here in the creation account, before the fall, Adam was alone. And the scriptures tell us that it was not good. So Adam was lonely because he was perfect. All of our other problems arise out of our imperfection. But loneliness arises because of our perfection. Let me put it another way. You are not lonely because there's something wrong with you. Loneliness is the built-in trigger that God has provided for you to seek friendship with Him and your fellow man. Loneliness is universal. It's true in every culture, in every era, and no matter the age of the person. Think about it. A child, like Eden, longs for same-sex, same-age relationships. An adolescent wants not only these kind of relationships, but also desires romance. An adult longs for a mate. A married person longs for intimacy in their marriage. The elderly long for their deceased loved one. Therefore, nothing is more humanizing and more indispensable than friendship. And nothing is more terrible than loneliness. That's why our text today is applicable. So I'm going to approach John 15, verses 12 to 17 by asking it 3 questions. What is friendship? Why is friendship difficult? And how do we make friends? And throughout all these questions, I'm going to be going back and forth between friendship with God and friendship with others, because that's what our text does. Our text in verses 12 to 17 goes back and forth. So first question, what is friendship? Well, look in our text. Friendship for both God and man is defined with the word love. And this love in our text is defined differently for God than it is for man. Look at verse 13. For man to love man, they are to lay down their life for one another. But look at love for God in verse 14. What's love for God? Obedience. So there's differentiation. You love God differently than you love people. You wouldn't lay down your life for God because he's in danger of losing it. Because he's not in danger of losing it. With friendship with man, you wouldn't obey your friends. Therefore, love depends on the audience. You can be friends with both God and man, but you love them differently. So let's look at love for God and then love for man. What's friendship with God look like and what's friendship with man look like? Well, friendship with God. Let's go back to verse 14. Verse 14 says that we are friends with God by obeying his commandment. Well, if you think about this, obedience and friendship next to each other might cause you to have an objection. Your objection goes something like this. How could Jesus call us his friends and then lay on us the burden for obedience? What kind of friend requires you to submit to their authority as a condition for their friendship? Well, that's the mystery of the verse. This verse isn't supposed to be read as a condition. Rather, Jesus is saying that love for others is not conditional for his love. Love for others is characteristic. There's a huge difference between condition and characteristic. It's the same difference of because and so that. I'm going to give you an illustration. Imagine I walk in my house on our anniversary, and I've got roses and a Hallmark card. Jenna, for whatever reason, she loves Hallmark cards. I would much rather write her a card, but she would prefer a Hallmark card. So I come in with a Hallmark card and my roses, and I give them to Jenna, and I'm a bit nervous, and I say, Jenna, happy anniversary. I'm doing this so that you will love me. What am I doing? I'm acting out of deep insecurity. And some of us do the same thing with God. We obey him and we say, God, I'm obeying you so that you might love me. Well, think about it the other way. Think about if I walk in, I'm not necessarily confident because I'm such a great husband or such a great father, but I'm coming in because I'm very confident that Jenna already loves me and I give her these things because I love her. That's my gift. It's not a payment, but it's evidence. The same is true with Jesus. Obeying Jesus by loving others is a proof of our friendship with him. See, friendship with Jesus, though, make no mistake, it's not like a friendship with a peer. Jesus is God, which makes obedience necessary in friendship with him. While friendship with Jesus does include submitting to his authority, we need to simultaneously consider that his authority is personal. And his authority has our good in mind. There were other religious founders. You have Muhammad, he left us a book. Confucius left us Proverbs. And Buddha left us sayings. But Jesus leaves us himself through his spirit. That means Jesus is interested in being your friend. He wants a relationship with you. He doesn't just want to direct you on how to live. Imagine you're lost. Many of us, when we're lost, we just put in our address. I'm doing some work on my home, and I've got someone taking down wallpaper because I can't do it. And all he asked, he didn't ask for directions, he simply asked for my address. You know what that means? He's just going to plug the address into his phone and get to my house. And probably on the way to my house, his phone is just going to tell him step by step how to get to my house. Well, in the olden days, that's not how people did directions. In the olden days, there were really two ways to get somewhere. One way was to receive directions, a step by step. Here's how you get from point A to point B. Or you have someone who knows where they're going in the car with you. Well, Jesus doesn't hand you step by step directions and tell you how to get somewhere. Jesus hops in the car with you. And he goes with you. He offers himself to you. See, that's friendship with God. That's friendship with Jesus. But let's look at friendship with man. Look at verse 13. Verse 13 spells it out very clearly what our love for fellow man looks like, what friendship with fellow man looks like. It says this, greater love has no one than this, then he lay down his life for his friends. So even though giving your life for one another is the greatest sacrifice you can make, the principle of this verse really goes beyond that. It also says that any sacrifice you make for any friend is an act of love. So do you want to know how you can measure the strength of any friendship you might have? It's by measuring the degree of sacrifice that the friendship costs. So here we have it. Friendship with God, friendship with man. Friendship with God means we obey him. Friendship with our fellow man means we sacrifice on their behalf. That's number one. What is friendship? Number two, why is friendship difficult? Look at verse 15. Jesus says, "No longer do I call you servants, for the servant does not know what his master is doing. But I have called you friends, for all that I've heard from my Father, I have made known to you." Isn't it odd to you that Jesus says, "I no longer call you servants"? Well, if you're familiar with the New Testament, it should be. The New Testament in Romans chapter 6 very clearly states that Christians are slaves of God. But Jesus' point is not that his followers are no longer slaves. His point is, in the upper room with his disciples, is that Jesus is admitting them into the inner motives of his life and his ministry. Think about it this way. Just this is what Jesus is saying in verse 15. He's saying, a slave is not meant to know why his master says, do this. It's simply for the slave to do it. He's not to ask why. But when one obeys a friend who also happens to be his or her authority, then that person is submitting to one who has shared everything with him or her. So why did Jesus have to tell them so overtly that friendship was more fundamental to their relationship than servanthood? Well, I think it's quite clear. This is what makes friendship so difficult, both with God and with one another. We prefer contractual relationships, superficial relationships, and lastly, isolation. In both our relationship with God and with other people. Let's look at contractual relationships. Many of us, we choose a strategy for friendship with both God and man that is very flawed at its core. I'll give you a personal example. Here's my strategy. Here's the way that I operate because I'm a fallen person. And I operate with this common ploy, and it's this. I will be a good listener. And I'm going to combine that with a decent sense of humor and a willingness to help. So my job is to listen, make you laugh, and help you out. Your job is to be my friend so that I won't be lonely. So relationship's contractual. Each party maintains their end of the bargain in order for the relationship to work. But the relationship only works until I ask you to help me. Until I ask you to listen to me for 10 minutes when I've listened to you for hours. But instead of telling you that I'm hurt because I'm afraid of rejection, what I do is I go into self-protection mode and I pull away. Do you see the dynamic at play here? One moment I long for your acceptance, and the other, I'm pulling away from you in self-protection. I'm sending mixed signals, and sooner or later, it just takes way too much effort, and I give up. And you probably will give up before me. But see, this contractual, utilitarian kind of relationship also describes the way that we deal with God. See, we go to church, we give money to Christian causes, we serve on committees. As long as God holds up his end of the deal. Providing for us an adequate job. Keeping our health in good order. Keeping our kids in line. But when God doesn't hold up his end of the bargain, we pull away. And we pull away because we're disappointed. And the contract, as we have drawn it up, has been broken. When we operate in this manner, we're operating in a master-slave manner. In a master-slave manner, there's no personal sacrifice. There's not unlimited access. But then the paradigm of friendship comes in and blows it all up. Because in friendship, there's sacrifice. And there's unlimited access. All right, so is this starting to describe some of your friendships, both with God and man? All right, let's move to superficial. Look at Jesus in verse 15 and 16. In verse 15, he gives us access to everything that he knows from God. In verse 15, he's really giving part of his definition, criteria for friendship is access. And then in verse 16, he gives us permission to ask for anything we want as long as it's in his name. Many of us would say we have many friends, but in reality, all we have are superficial acquaintances. Why is that? It's likely because we've disclosed very little of ourselves to them. You want to measure the strength of your friendships? You can do it with sacrifice. You can also do it through access by asking the question, is there reciprocal vulnerability in my friendships? If there's not reciprocal and there's just one-way vulnerability, you know what you have on your hands? A therapeutic friendship. So here we have contractual, superficial, and lastly, isolation. Look in your bulletin at Proverbs 18:1. Proverbs has much to say about friendship. And in 18:1, this is this fascinating verse. It says this, "Whoever isolates himself seeks his own desire. He breaks out against all sound judgment." So even though we are created for community, for the very reason that because we're made in the image of God, we break out against sound judgment by isolating ourselves. So not only is your kind of internal, your flesh, the way you're wired, your nature, is going to keep you in isolation, so is our culture. Robert Putnam is a professor at Harvard, he's a social sciences professor, and he's done an extensive study on community in America. And he's published it under the title Bowling Alone. Anybody ever bowled alone? I think it's a brilliant title. But he cites three reasons why Americans, these are his words, don't know our neighbors and we don't care. Three reasons. First reason, the pressures of time and money. And he says the group of people that feel the most pressure are hurried full-time workers who are advanced in their education, and also women, people aged 25 to 54, and parents of young children, especially single parents. So interestingly enough, these pressures of time and money don't cripple the low-income people, they cripple the middle class and upper middle class segment of our population. Second reason, why we struggle with friendships, why we struggle with community, according to Dr. Putnam. Second reason is this, mobility and urban sprawl. Mobility and urban sprawl. Nearly 1 in 5 of us move each year. More than 2 in 5 of us expect to move in the next 5 years. So accordingly, because people expect to do this, they are 20 to 25% less likely to attend church, attend club meetings, volunteer, or work on community projects than those who expect to stay put. All right, so we've got suburban sprawl, mobilization, we've got time and money, and lastly, is technology. Technology, social media is an oxymoron. You can't be social and have media at the same time. To be plugged in socially means you're unplugged with media. And Putnam quotes T.S. Eliot, famous American poet. This is brilliant. T.S. Eliot, this is early in the television age. He observed this about television. He says this: it is a medium of entertainment which permits millions of people to listen to the same joke at the same time, yet remain lonesome, hearing only the sound of your own laugh. So what about you? Are you in contractual relationships that vacillate between insecurity and self-protection? Have you settled for acquaintances rather than friends? And because of the pull of your own heart and of our individualistic culture, are you living in isolation? I know these are tough questions. And for many of us, it's going to require friends to answer them. Perhaps the best thing you can do is not answer these questions yourself, but look to a friend and ask them to ask those questions of yourself. So here we have it. Those are our first two. What are friends? Why are they so difficult? Lastly, how do you make friends? I've got two insights from our passage. The first one, the first insight on how you make friends, is that you realize that all true friendships are discovered, not created. It's kind of a bad question, isn't it? How do you make friends? Well, the short answer to the question is that you can't. You can't make them with Jesus, and you can't make them with other people. Look at verse 16. Jesus very clearly says, we did not choose him, but he chose us. If you think you initiated this friendship that you have with Jesus, and that he's agreed to be your friend because of something impressive about you, you have not sufficiently understood your depravity and the unmerited nature of God's grace. The true situation about your relationship with Jesus is that you and I both, we not only failed to be friends with Jesus, we actually were his enemies. We rejected his rightful rule over us. We spurned his love. But the great miracle of it all is that Jesus moves towards us while we're his enemies so that we might go from being an enemy to a friend. Think about the scene of John 15. Jesus in the upper room with his disciples, the people he spent the most time with. And he says, verse 13, greater love has no one than this, that he lay down his life for his friends. Little do these men know that Jesus is about ready to demonstrate that verse to them, his friends. See, Jesus isn't going to cut off some years from his life so that the disciples can live a few more. Jesus is going to endure the wrath of God on their behalf and of ours so that we might be his friends. This is the way Jesus loved you, and this is how you become his friend. There's two great figures in church history, John Wesley and Martin Luther. And if you were to read their biographies of how they became Christians or how they were converted, here's what you'll find out about them. Before they were converted, they were not these wild, worldly men. They were churchmen. They were employed by the church. Both of them, before they were converted. And in both accounts, it was the fact that Jesus demonstrated the greatest love ever displayed by dying on their behalf that they realized that they needed to quit being busy and being moral and be busy about being Jesus' friend. And until this fact that warmed Luther and Wesley's heart warms your heart, you will remain in isolation from God, you will remain in a contractual relationship with God, or you will remain in superficiality with him. So how do you know if you're Jesus' friends? Let me just ask a few questions. Do the words of Scripture ever leap off the page as if someone audibly spoke them to you? Do you ever have this strange mixture of assurance of grace and conviction of sin when the gospel is preached? Do you hate your sin because of what it did to Jesus, or do you hate your sin because of its consequences in your life? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, or even sometimes yes, then you can know that Jesus has chosen to be your friend. But not only do we don't choose Jesus, we don't choose our own friends either. All true friendships are discovered. They're not created. You can destroy friendships, you can build friendships, but you can't manufacture them. That's what C.S. Lewis is talking about in The Four Loves. He's got one chapter on friendship love. I commend it to you. I'm gonna read a couple quotes from Lewis here. First one, he says this about being friends. That is why those pathetic people who simply want friends can never make any. The very condition of having friends is that we should want something else besides friends. Friendship must be about something, even if it were only an enthusiasm for white mice or dominoes. Those who have nothing can share nothing. Those who are going nowhere can have no fellow travelers. So here's the trick. Be about something. When you're busy about doing an activity with others, you will suddenly look up and realize that you've made a friend without intending to. Here's another Lewis quote. He says, "You will not find the warrior, the poet, the philosopher, or the Christian by staring in his eyes as if he were your mistress. Better to fight beside him, read with him, argue with him, pray with him." So what's Lewis saying? He's saying we build friendship most effectively when we're doing something together. That is why a really bad way to go about being friends with someone, to begin a friendship, is to say, "Hey, will you meet me for coffee every week and let's talk about our lives for an hour?" We would be much better off going in together on some sort of cause, whether it be child literacy, remodeling a home, playing in a sand volleyball league, or even teaching children Sunday school. All right, that's the first. How do you make friends? You realize that they're discovered and not created. The second tip from our text is the necessity of access for true friendship. I know I touched on this a bit earlier, but let me beef it up. Access is crucial for relationships because we commonly equate friendship to common interests. And although common interest isn't a bad thing, it's a non-essential thing for true friendship. What is essential is giving other people access to who we really are, our deep anxieties as well as our abiding passions. We see this theme in two places in our text. I didn't make this up. Jesus says in verse 15 that all that he has received from the Father he has revealed to the disciples. In other words, Jesus has provided unlimited access to what the Father has shown him. So one of the reasons that you and I can be friends with Jesus is that he has given us access into all who he is and all he's done. Here's the principle for our horizontal friendships. It's impossible to truly be friends with someone who you refuse to be vulnerable with. Sharing the burdens of life, confessing sin, and celebrating is the business of friendship. Let me show you another place. Verse 16. Jesus is commanding them, the disciples, us, to ask for whatever they wish in his name. This is really odd. If you were to read this section of John, here's what you'll see. In chapter 14, verses 13 and 14, Jesus says the exact same thing. 9 verses earlier, verse 7, chapter 15, Jesus says it again. So why the repetition of such a lavish grace? Why does Jesus have to say, "Ask for whatever you want, as long as it's in my name"? Why does he have to do it 3 times? Because we're prone not to ask. We prove that we give little access to Jesus by the infrequency and the shallowness of our requests. Our unconscious choice to not come to Jesus with our requests is evidence that we've given him little access. Friends, do you see how foolish this is on our behalf? Do you see how deeply sin has affected us? But do you also see how freely Jesus has offered himself to us? Here you have Jesus, who wants to move from being enemies to being friends, and he provides everything needed to make that happen. And because this is true, this is why it's appropriate for us to sing. So let us now stand and sing hymn number 455.